I have something on my phone. It's 7:10. Oh my God, thank you, God, thank you, God. We're almost done with this. Do you need, I'm going to show you a little bit more, but do you need a break? No? No? We're good to go? Okay. Remember I said to you that when you're done with the fourth and fifth step, you will be given intellectual enlightenment. I'm totally enlightened that how Mary Thayer has been going against her values right now, aren't I? What I did for many years was I would finish this and not consciously, but unconsciously, it would be like my actions would be, thanks God, now I know what to do, I'll handle it. And I would just go off because now I knew exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. For some reason, I had the illusion that I had some power and control. Now that I knew, I can do. Unfortunately, knowledge is not this program. This isn't an intellectual thing. It is intellectual, but what we're claiming is spiritual. We're looking for something that's going to change my heart, not my head. I need new power to flow in for me to be able to do something. And the important thing is your sixth and seventh step. I, for years, would read the sixth and seventh step, and then I'd just go out to do whatever. I don't do that anymore. After my 20-year thing, when I realized that I followed everything like a dutiful checkoff list to do this, as if I'm going to check off these steps and get someplace and maybe get an A or something, I didn't realize this was changing my whole being. My soul was going to start to evolve, that I was going to have to live by a different set of values, and that I didn't have the power to stop doing some of the stuff that I've done. I didn't have that. But I'm here to tell you that there is a power that can do that for you. I've had that experience. I have watched the three gals that I have on here, plus that Juana there, change. Not with her power, let me tell you. Her power got her deeper into whatever doo-doo. It was when she really knew there was a presence that was present, that girl shines with the glory of a presence. It's been such a trip to watch you people see God come on board. I remember the day I saw that happen with Missy. I remember the day when she would come and she would say, oh, I hate Mary Thayer. And I had wrote it in my journal. And I said, I was in the meeting as she's saying it. Isn't it wonderful she can tell that right in front of me now? Do you see how honest she was? You see how honest that is, how authentic that is? She never hated me. She didn't like a lot of things I had to say to her. But something kept bringing her back to me. Obviously, it was not her persona, her false self. It was something deep down inside. It's our souls that make us do this stuff. Once we hear the truth, and we know the truth, and we know the people that will give us the truth, we'll listen. We will listen. I have. I have called people I don't even know, but I heard them on a tape and I knew they had an answer for me. And they didn't fail me. When you hear somebody with your heart, you want to go and ask them something because your soul is hearing that. The way I got Dawn as a sponsee, for God's sakes, I didn't know who she was. I was when I was dying that year. And Tom, Juana's husband, said, she's not taking sponsees. And lo and behold, they asked me to speak at this conference she was attending. I didn't even know where she was from or anything. And I came into, it was a ski lodge, and you come in on the bottom, you take this escalator up to where the convention was being held. And this couple comes up to me and they say to me, oh, I see you've got a tag. You're here for the convention. I said, yeah. And I didn't have the speaker. I don't wear speaker tags. You know, you're the loneliest person in the convention if you got one of those on. Nobody wants to approach you because people think you know something. And so you're all alone. So I don't wear those things. And so what happened is she came up to me and she said, we want to know where to register. And I was about ready to get on these escalator things and go up. So I said, oh, just follow me up the steps. She had come to that conference looking for a sponsor. She didn't know who I was. And then the next day I spoke, and lo and behold, she came up and she asked me to work with her. We've gone through quite a bit in the last 5-6 years. It's been 6 years, hasn't it? This girl had no idea who I was. I didn't know if I'd work with her. She had a little checkoff list going, and I didn't think she could hear that I was going to sponsor her soul, not her persona. She had a lot of all the externals going well, and then she didn't. And she went through the death of her husband, and when that happened, she didn't know I was a grief counselor, but I knew why I was sponsoring, and I knew that day why she followed me up those steps. And we know why we're together. Because her soul could talk to my soul. You know, I worked with death and dying for a long time. Taught me a lot. Taught me a lot. One of the things it taught me is that you can't be a phony when you're dealing with somebody that's dying. You can't be a people pleaser. You've got to be authentic. And I think we have to be with people that we're working with. I'm not going to pat you into the grave. I'm going to try to tell you exactly what you can do, maybe to stop blocking the sunlight from the spirit, and that there is a presence that can be present with you. My new coin phrase for this year, or the last few years, is sad is not bad. Do you know that? Sad is not bad. A lot of sadness that's going on nowadays. It's not bad, but I have to admit to you I'm sad. And we've walked through a lot of things, haven't we? So when you get to this thing and you start to find out what you've been doing and why you've been doing it, and you want to have God, you know, now you have to, that takes a lot of integrity to do a fifth step. That's your principle behind your fifth step, is your integrity. To tell the truth to somebody like that in the fifth step. And now your sixth step comes. Are you entirely ready for God? We can just stop right there. You don't have to ask anything more. Are you ready for God? Because this is your half measure point. Half measures are going to avail you nothing. Either you're going to be entirely ready for God after having done this fifth step, or go back to doing whatever. If you get another ace in the hole that you can pull out, go ahead and pull it out. That's fine. Ask God to be willing. Or maybe you're ready to risk. This is where we separate the men from the boys, or the kids from the adults, or whether or not you're going to get mature or not. Are you ready for God? And if you are, then it tells you that you're going to humbly ask. Now, I have found that I do not humbly ask unless I'm humbled. This pandemic has given me the ability to see that I can know what's wrong with me, but I don't have the power to control it. And I was humbled during this pandemic. I had some shattering of my, I guess you would say, my self-delusions about what something was and it isn't. And I had a pain that of having to face a reality I didn't want to look at. I wanted to look at something else. You know, my sponsor used to always say to me, Mary Thea, I don't know what it is about you. You won't look at the whole picture. If there's a little darkness in the picture, you paint pink over it. You don't look at what is. You look at only what you want to see. And I was doing that. And unfortunately, I had a reality that I was looking at, and I did not respond, I reacted. I was fascinated with my reaction. Fascinated how quickly my mind came up to justify my action. How my story came up to say exactly why I was entitled to do what I did and it was wrong. Wasn't necessarily wrong what I said, wasn't wrong, what I saw, but how I expressed it and the energy behind it was wrong. It was wrong. But it was it cracked my acorn shell, probably cracked the other person's too some. But the truth of the matter was, is that I saw a reality that I didn't want to see. So can I fix that? No. Where am I in the pandemic with that situation? I'm in step 6 and 7. Why? Because I'm ready for God. Why? Because I was humbled and I humbly asked. I humbly asked. And when I humbly asked and I did what we call our 7-step prayer, I said, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. A long time I didn't understand that. I understand that today. The good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect in my character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength. Big part of my prayer when I do this. Grant me strength to go out from here to do your bidding. I said that prayer for years, the way it's read. And for years, I asked, my conduct looked as though I had said, grant me strength to go out to do my will, not God's will. So with that humbling experience that I had, this became very important to me. And what does that mean to me? And I'm going to tell you what that means to me. It means I'm going to wait on the Lord. When I'm in a 6 and 7 step, I know that I am going to take a look at some hard, fast things because I've asked God to remove the good and the bad. I don't know what's good. I don't know what's bad. I don't know what was good about that situation or bad. I know sometimes the extent on the way I've done something could be what was bad, but maybe it was good. I remember one time yelling at some guy in the hospital when I was first sober and I did 12-step calls in County General down. It was alcoholic ward, and there was some dude in there, and I asked him if he was alcoholic. He said, alcohol? I said, yeah, I don't hear you saying. No, he's on the alcoholic ward thing, and I said, do you have a problem with alcohol? He said, I don't know. I said, well, how'd you get in this hospital? And he said, oh. And he had been sitting there with a gauze thing over his leg and sponging iodine over his leg as we were talking. And I said, so how did you get in here? He said, oh, he said, well, they found me in an alley and I had maggots in my leg. Well, I jumped back from the bed and I screamed, oh, denial. My God, I've heard it all. Jeez, of God. I mean, geez, Lord, he doesn't think he's alcoholic. Here he is laying in a gutter with maggots. And oh, my God. And I just had a fit and I walked out and went into the, in those days, we had smokers on the hospital ward things. And the guy that I went around with said, he was laughing when he came into the meeting. I said, God. And he said, well, I think you got his attention. I said, my God. I said, I can't believe it. A year later, I'm at the Midnight Mission. One of my friends is speaking. And there's these two, one, you knew he was a resident there, sitting in front of me. And there was another man, good, wet, drunk, yelling and screaming. And the one in front of me was trying to tell the other one to shut up as we were trying to listen to this person, my friend, speak. And after the meeting, I was standing there waiting for my friend who was being thanked. And this man that was sitting in front of me turned and looked at me and he said, you look familiar. I thought, how am I looking familiar to this dude that's living in the Midnight Mission? Turns out, he was the guy with the maggots in his leg. And it was because of me screaming and yelling that I got his attention. He was sober. So we don't know why we do things. You know, I keep thinking that's bad, but it was good. So I don't know those things. So that's why I like this prayer. So what happened to me is that I'm now waiting on the Lord, and I'm going to read two things on what I think you go through when you do a 7-step prayer and you're ready to grow. Who's going to read the first one? Which one of my gals are going to read this? I'll take pictures of it and send it because I'm going to tell you what it does. You're going to go through some necessary suffering. Know that if you're going to change, you're going to suffer a little bit. Not like we haven't suffered already, so why not go through a little suffering for some good? And I found this reading by a person by the name of Outside Stuff, but his name is Father Richard Rohr, and he has a book, and it's called Falling Upward, and it's on page 85 and 86. Who wants to read that? Dawn?
I'll read it. I put my headset on. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me better?
Yes.
Awesome. I'll read Necessary Suffering. It says, Seventh Step, Necessary Suffering, page 85 and 86 from Richard Rohr in Falling Upward. Quote, they make very clear that there is a necessary suffering that cannot be avoided, which our higher power calls losing your very life, or losing what I and others call the false self. The false self is the role, title, and personal image that is largely a creation of your own mind and attachments. It will and must die in the exact correlation to how much you want the real. How much false self are you willing to shed to find your true self is the last question. Such necessary suffering will always feel like dying, which is what good spiritual teachers will tell you about very honestly. Alcoholics Anonymous is notoriously successful here. If your spiritual guides do not talk to you about dying, they are not good spiritual guides. Your true self is for you objectively who you objectively are from the beginning in the mind and heart of God. The face you had before you were born, as the Zen masters say. It is your substantial self, your absolute identity, which can neither be gained nor lost by any technique, group affiliation, morality, or formula whatsoever. The surrendering of our false self, which we have usually taken for our absolute identity, yet is merely a relative identity, is the necessary suffering needed to find the pearl of great price that is always hidden inside this lovely but passing human shell.
Thanks, Don. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is as I sit and wait on the Lord, I feel the suffering of my actions and what's happened, and I'm also fully aware that I have no power to go forward until I know when God comes on board with a seventh step, I'll tell you what happens to you. When you go through a seventh step, when you finally feel compassion for yourself and for whoever else is involved, and you have forgiveness for yourself, and you also forgive the other, God has finally gotten on board. It's not something I can manufacture. I'm not a forgiving, I'm not a compassionate person. Those are phony baloney things I put on, so you think that. But it's not authentic until but when I authentically start to see the situation at a deeper level, and I have that, I can then finally start to look at the rest of the steps. So there's a waiting period here between on your sixth and seventh step. And there's another thing that I found. My sponsor's husband used to have this thing that he would say. I didn't know what he was talking about because I wasn't raised with Bibles or anything. But he would say that he had a problem. He thought it was something horrible was going to happen. He rushed home. He thought he would find out that his daughter was dead or something. And he ran into his apartment just thinking the light would be blinking on the phone. And nothing was happening at all. And he couldn't understand why he had this terrible angst and this terrible, terrible feeling of pain. And he looked down and the Bible was on his coffee table. And it was open. And he read, I will refine you in the furnace of your afflictions. I said, what the heck does that mean? I couldn't figure that out. I thought, what does that mean? And of course, he probably was talking about the sixth and seventh step, but I never knew. I was always going, what does that mean? Did I ask him? No, because he was very bright and he intimidated me. But years later, somebody sent this on an email, and it caught my eye. It said, the refiner's touch. And I believe this is what happens to us in the sixth and seventh step. And I'm going to read it to you. It says there was a group of women in a Bible study on the book of Malachi. As they were studying chapter 3, they came across verse 3. Now I know where his book, Bible, was open to. Although I've never read Malachi, I should probably go read it. Anyway, it said, the verse said, he will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. This verse puzzled the women, and they wondered what this statement meant about the character and nature of God. One of the women offered to find out about the process of refining silver and get back to the group at the next Bible study. That week, the woman called up a silversmith and made an appointment to watch him at work. She didn't mention anything about the reason for her interest in silver beyond her curiosity about the process of refining silver. As she watched the silversmith, he held a piece of silver over the fire and let it heat up. He explained that in refining silver, one needed to hold the silver in the middle of the fire where the flames were hottest so as to burn away all the impurities. The women thought about God holding us in such a hot spot. Then she thought again about the verse that he sits as a refiner and purifier of silver. She asked the silversmith if it was true that he had to sit there in front of the fire the whole time the silver was being refined. The man answered that yes, he not only had to sit there holding the silver, but he had to keep his eyes on the silver the entire time it was in the fire. For if the silver was left even a moment too long in the flames, it would be destroyed. The woman was silent for a moment, and then she asked the silversmith, how do you know when the silver is fully refined? He smiled at her and answered, oh, that's the easy part. When I see my image reflected in it. So if today you are feeling the heat of the fire, remember that God has his eye on you and will keep his hand on you and watch over you until he sees his image in you. I think that's the best example of what I'm going through. I know that the pain I'm feeling, it's like the impurities of my belief structures on thinking I know everything or whatever is being burned away so that I will get to see the reality of what's happening. And when that happens, I will receive, as I said, forgiveness and compassion. And when that happens, I can finally make a list of how I've harmed whoever or whatever. I truly believe the definition of harm in our 8th step deals with my deliberately misleading another for my own gain or benefit. I believe that's the definition I've been using now for the 8th step. When I review that, I can see how I've been, it's everybody, you know, really. But when I deliberately mislead another for my own gain or benefit, is where I've done the harm. And that's where my list begins. Now, I deliberately misled God for my own gain and my own benefit for a long time in my life. Do it my way, not thy will be done, my way. So God is always on the top of my 8th step list. I'm just gonna let you know that. And every day that I pray and I do a daily reprieve, there's a form of my making amends to God. And if I can do that, if I can do what this program asked me to do in step 11, where to ask God to direct my thinking, to ask him what my next step is to be, to ask him when I get, you know, if I'm agitated, if I remember to ask first, it's a form of my actions, living actions on amends to God. Now, when I have my list, I want to just briefly say to you, the 9th step, this would be another whole thing. But the truth of the matter is, if you're ready to make amends, please run it by your sponsors before you do it. You'll end up having to do 2 amends if you don't. Make sure that you write down what you've done and keep it on your side of the street. And a good sponsor will help you with that. Another thing I had to be aware of, I just don't walk up to people and make amends. I make an appointment with them. I don't say after a meeting, by the way, I want to talk to you. I really didn't like what you said. And I told somebody, geez, I'm gone. How many people walk up to me after a meeting, want to make amends or something? I think it's inappropriate. I might want to go to the bathroom or something, you know, and here you are trying to, you know, make amends to me. I think it's another need for another amends. You know, why don't we have a little politeness when we do this stuff? I don't make amends. I'm an alcoholic, and I never walk up to someone and say, I have to make an amend to you because I'm in AA and I need to make an amend. That's an excuse. My sponsees are not allowed to do that. I go against the big book on that. You're going to make an amends because you hurt somebody, not because you're an alcoholic. Whether you're drunk or not, it doesn't make any difference. You make an amends because you realize you've been wrong. And you don't mention, I'm doing this only so I can stay sober. I think that's so selfish. I don't know why, but it's my experience. Do what you want. This is my experience. I don't do those things. Anyway, the other thing I want to say is that the 10th step is the one that'll bring you into emotional sobriety. I love the 10th step. I wish this whole thing was just on the 10th step, but in order for me to get into the world of the spirit, I have to do the other 9 steps. If you're not feeling the presence of the presence in your life and haven't done these things, it's going to be hard to be in the world of the spirit. You'll be in the world of your mind, but you won't have another God on board. And it's a different thing when you have a God on board. It's a wonderful thing. You don't feel alone anymore. It's not painful for me to do this workshop. If I was just me here, it would be a wreck. But I do believe that there is a presence that helps me do these things and has helped me do these things and do a lot of things that I didn't think I could ever do. Believe it or not, I'm an introvert. I'll have to sleep for 5 days after this. It's exhausting. But anyway, I'm going to end this pretty quick here. We've got a few more minutes. And I want to just end emotional sobriety with the 10th step. Your 10th, 11th, and 12th step deal with maintenance, spirituality, and service. It's hard to do service if you don't know who you are and you're not carrying the message of this program. Anyway, when I got to the 10th, I'm going on page 84, and I'm just going to kind of go through this and tell you where I am with this. This is why I do this. I've experienced the promises of the 10th step. This is why I, you know, it's like I drank for an effect. I take the steps for an effect. And the effect is the promises in the 10th step for me. It says, halfway down, it says, this thought brings me to step 10, which suggests I continue. Listen to how many times it tells me not to hang up my working shoes, so to speak. Or it says, I continue to take personal inventory. I continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along. I vigorously commence this way of life as I clean up my past. I have entered the world of the spirit. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. I need to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when they crop up, number one, because I'm in the world of the spirit, I'm to go to God first, not my sponsor. Okay? That's a big point right there. If I got the world, remember, God's your real sponsor. We're nothing but little candles showing light until you connect with your real sponsor, which is deep down inside. You know, none of us are ahead of anybody here as far as I'm concerned. I might have done it longer, but the truth of the matter is we all have the same solution here. We're going to walk shoulder to shoulder to escape disaster together. And maybe I can give you a candle of light until you find that God inside of you. And then you, in return, will give a candle to somebody else. So when these crop up, I'm going to ask God to remove them. That's first. And then I'm going to discuss it with my sponsor or someone and make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. And then I'm going to turn my thoughts to my thoughts. Now, I don't have to do this. I just have to turn my thoughts on how I can be helpful. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I have ceased fighting the pandemic by now. See? For by this time, some sanity has returned on how to live through a pandemic. I'm not really interested in too much about this and fixing it. If I'm tempted, I recoil like it from a hot flame. Now these are your promises here. I'm going to recoil from complaining about everything like a hot flame. It's useless. I react sanely and normally. Now remember what the second step said? Restored me to sanity, which is sound thinking and balance. See, I'm going to be there now. I've done the work. And I will find that this has happened automatically. I will see that my new attitude towards the pandemic or liquor or the cat or whatever has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I have been placed, listen to this, this is my favorite one, placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn off anything. Instead, the problem's been removed. It does not exist for me. I'm not cocky, nor am I afraid. That is my experience. That is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. If I'm placed in a position of neutrality, I've experienced that. And when I'm in a position of neutrality, I don't react. You know that? Seems as though I have a power to keep my mouth shut. Seems as though it's kind of like, you know, I have a lot of sponsees that have a lot of drama. And, you know, they can bring it to me. I don't have to get involved with it. I'm in a place of neutrality. I can listen to whatever's happening. A lot of times I will say to them, are you telling me something or are you asking me something? Because usually they have to tell you everything, you know. And so if they say, I'm telling you, I just let them talk. I don't have to do anything. Pretty soon they go, well, no, I'm asking you something. You know, in order to be able to do that, to wait for somebody to ask for me to do something, that takes a position of neutrality. It's a wonderful place. Do you know that? I'm not trying to be there. I'm not saying, oh, I'm going to be neutral. I'm just fine. I had a situation with somebody that I had inventoried and I just didn't want to have any painful thing go on. And I remember a painful thing happened and I was really upset because I did not want to trigger that in the person. And the person was yelling at me. And I was really, and I was inside myself going, hey, God, I didn't want to have this happen again. What do I do now? I mean, I thought you were helping me. I thought whatever. This is going on in my head as the person was yelling at me. And all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I said, well, you know, you're right. I was wrong. I never asked you about that. I should have asked you. I just assumed. And that makes, you know, to assume something is to make an ass out of me and you. And I said, and I did that. And I'm sorry about that. I was wrong. They didn't know what to say. I didn't know I said that. In fact, I could have just jumped up and said, who said that? That was bright. But I didn't realize that I'm in the world of the spirit and God does for me what I can't do for myself. And I was in this place of neutrality. I did exactly what the 10th step said. I was wrong and I promptly admitted it. I didn't have a feeling with it. I didn't have a story with it. I just said, God, I was wrong. You're right. I was wrong. Who says that? I don't do that. Heather says this to me. I love this. I didn't even know she was in the car with me and I hit a car. Okay. Naughty. I rolled into a car. I was at a stoplight and I was doing something and I rolled in and tapped this car in front of me. And so I just put it in park and I jumped out and she was with me and she jumped out and the people in front of me jumped out and the driver came up and I said, I am so sorry. That was my fault. I did that. I'm so sorry. What do I need to do to fix this? I didn't pay any attention. He thought it was nothing. His partner, I think, wanted me to, you know, was going to sue me or something. But he said, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it. He drove off. Now, I didn't think anything. I didn't say anything. That's the first time. I don't even remember hitting anybody. And I'm speaking down someplace, and she's introducing me. And she says, the woman is going to speak tonight. she's going to be the woman that she is right now. She says, what woman? Who drives up, hits someone, and jumps out and says, that was my fault? Who does that? I do. I was wrong, and I knew it, because I live by a principle. I live by a principle of honesty, being authentic. I have some guidelines on how to do things. I'm placed in a position of neutrality. When you get that, you don't want to lose it. And how I know when a tenth step's occurring, I don't feel as though I'm in a position of neutrality. I'm making up a story in my head. And when I'm doing that, I better keep my mouth shut, restrain a tongue and pen. Other than that, I'm not going to demonstrate any emotional sobriety to you folks. And there are days I don't. And there are many days I do not wake up wanting to hurt anybody. That is not my goal. I don't jump out of bed and see, how can I hurt Juana today? That's not mine. It doesn't mean I haven't hurt her. How can I? All I want to do is help. Doesn't mean that I didn't hurt Missy. Didn't mean I didn't hurt you, Dawn. Doesn't mean anything that I haven't said something here that's hurt some of you. That was not my intention. That doesn't mean that I haven't hurt you. And am I ready to hear why that has hurt you? Can I hear? Can I see that? I remember when I first started to do this and I was able to say to people, my God, hearing what you said, if I believe that's what I did, I would hate me too. I remember saying that one time. There is a possibility for us to live a life with these tools. That doesn't mean we're going to be perfect. That's why there is a step 10. It says when wrong, doesn't say if you ever get wrong again in your life, you are going to be wrong. I'm wrong every day. But I have a kit of spiritual tools that I'm willing to sharpen and continue to do for the rest of my life. And why? Because this is a limitless load. It's a limitless load. I can have all of this. That's what's promised me. That's what we have to share with each other. No matter if we have deaths, no matter if we have lost jobs, whether we've lost homes, whether we've been bankrupt, doesn't children, I have a sponsee that has two children she's lost. I have no idea how you do that. Plus the fact now she has cancer. I mean, I'm telling you, she's the most spiritual person we know. Is that not true, Missy? Jackie, are you on here? My God, that woman is amazing. I want to be by her side. She demonstrates God all the time. I love you folks. And by God, I didn't think I could do 4 hours. And by God, I think I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. I have several people asking if you would be willing to put your phone number in the chat because they want to call you. It's up to you. You can do email. You can have them contact us and we'll forward it to you.
I don't mind putting it up. Just know that I'll call you when I'm done being tired, okay?
All right, there you go.
Let me see how to do this.
One of the girls could probably do it for you.
Who can do that for me?
I'll do it, Mary. I also put the Facebook link in there.
Okay. Anybody would like to share with Mary? Does anybody have a question or a remark? Stick your electronic blue hand in the air and we'll get through that. I'll just open the chat up. You want to do it that way?
So I look over here, huh? It's 5 minutes.
There it is, Mary Faith, for those who've been requesting it.
Nobody has a question? Wow.
Hands are raised.
Wow. Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Well, somebody say something. I don't know how to do that.
Participants, Mary.
Oh.
Go down to participants.
Okay.
So?
Oh, I see. How about Karen S. Virginia?
Karen, can you unmute yourself, please?
Yes. That was a fabulous presentation of just going through the big book with all the steps. You know, I'm in Al-Anon, so I haven't really, at least for many years, gone through most of the big book, and I really, really enjoyed that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. How about Ingrid R?
Ingrid, can you unmute yourself?
Yes. Hello. Hi, I'm Ingrid, a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Thank you so much. That was just an amazing, just amazing for me to listen to that, to all that you said. I did my steps the big book way, but what you've done now is really cemented it down. I've just written notes and I've been going through so much fear recently with my instead of putting pandemic down, I've been putting family down, because we've all been locked down. And I can see that I came into the program because of my eldest son, but I think my another son has got a problem. His drinking affects me, and it's just affected me, all of this, and being able to put it all down, because it's come out of my neck and my back and the fear I have. And it's just amazing. I'm so grateful to my higher power that he had me connect in. I had no plan. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Sue, New Orleans, can you unmute yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Mary. It's Sue.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah. You know, you doing the inventory on the pandemic was wonderful, because I was writing all kinds of stuff. Some of it was the same as you, going to Detroit, going to spots. We were, you know, and then for the first thing was when they canceled the General Service Conference and we had to do it virtually. And, you know, and I'm thinking that all this is just happening to me, you know, and then I found out there were a bunch of other delegates that were really like, why is this happening to me? But I love having a different way of looking at the fourth step, and I think I'm going to write another one going that way, in addition, you know, other than the pandemic. But, you know, that was perfect. I mean, really perfect for me, and I thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you in Colorado next year. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue. Barbara, would you like to unmute yourself?
Hi, I'm Barbara. Mary, I just want to thank you so much. I am a double winner as well. And I liked what you said about there are different programs, but there's only 12 steps. And I really relate to that. And I believed that for a long time. And I'm really sorry that we have so many rules that we can't go across. But the other thing that that you said that I have always been, I've believed for a long time too, is that within every alcoholic is an Al-Anon. That's, I really believe that. And I'm just grateful for your sharing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Virginia, your iPad. Virginia, can you unmute your iPad? There you go.
Yes, I'm trying to. Hi.
There you are.
Thank you. I don't usually do 4-hour workshops.
Neither do I.
I have almost as much sobriety, and I'm almost as old as you are. I really identified a lot, and I found that was a wonderful workshop for me. I just want to ask you if you need to go to the bathroom.
Not yet.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Virginia.
Thank you, Virginia. Somebody is saying that the Facebook link is not working. That was temporary. We will post it. We will post that. With this recording. Catherine, you want to unmute yourself?
Also, it's under Dawn Lowndes on Facebook. It will be the most recent post. because it has AA content, I won't leave it up very long.
Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, my name's Catherine. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank you, Mary, and the other participants as well. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It's such a fresh approach and a way of looking at the steps. I've been a member of AA for 19 years and a grateful member of Al-Anon for 8 years. So I've thoroughly enjoyed everything, wrote down notes and notes. But I'd like to ask you a question. For the last couple of years, I'm going to be totally honest here, for the last couple of years, I fell away from practicing the steps in a structured way, the way it's laid down, okay? I've been through the steps, you know, a couple of times, but somewhere along the line, when my life got busy, I stopped practicing everything on a daily basis, although I was still going to meetings. It was half measures, so I was just doing a little bit of this and that. Okay, so I've got to a place where I'm trying to get back on track, get back on track with my emotional sobriety, because, you know, I know all the signs are there that I need to get back on track. So my question is, I'm just wondering, I'm a bit undecided whether I should get a new sponsor and go through the whole steps again, because I've been given different advice, or whether I can pick up from the step 10 and just do work on the step 10 and try and get back on track that way.
Okay. That's a big question. I guess what I would say, there are times in my recovery where, not consciously, I rested on my laurels, as it talks about. Mm-hmm. Am I blocked? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. The biggest thing happened to me is that I didn't have a God that was a friend. That was my turning point from intellectual recovery into more heartfelt. And so I had to work on, and I sometimes do this with my sponsees, I ask them where they feel safe and connected. And, you know, I had one woman, I'll just use it as an example. I said, where do you feel safe and connected? And she didn't know what I was talking about. And I said, you know, it's kind of like a feeling. Have you ever had a feeling someplace where you just felt safe and you could just go, oh? She said, yeah, when I get in my kayak. Well, every time I get into my kayak, I go, oh. And I said, okay, we're going to use the kayak God. In other words, the feeling she got when that happened. And I said, I want you to create a bubble of that energy. And she said, okay. And I said, because the minute you hit on that, when if I asked anybody here, one of you ladies that I don't know, and I talked to you a little bit, I would know where you feel okay. And if I asked you that and you kept thinking and thinking, I had one guy, I'll give you an example. I didn't know him very well. And I had this guy say, I don't know if I'm an agnostic or whatever the heck he thought he was. So I got talking to him a little bit, and he said he had lived in Florida, and he said, yeah, I used to live in Florida. I had this boat and I did this and I did that. And everything. Finally, you know, and then he said, but I just can't do this God thing. I said, well, what do you believe in? Oh, I don't know if I believe in. I said, oh yeah, I know what you believe in already. I know where you feel safe and connected. And he said, how do you know that? I said, the minute you get on your boat. And he went, yeah. And you can see it. You'll see it in a person. It's almost like they go, yeah. And at that moment, that's the energy you need to use to come through these steps. All right. Mm-hmm. Once I got into the steps and I found out what my values or morals were, in other words, what would God have me be? At night, I didn't get to the 11th step, but at night when I constructively review my day, I do not do it by saying, what did I do wrong? I do it this way. Where didn't I feel as though I was in a place of neutrality today? I just ask myself that. And then I take these principles and I say, was I honest today? If I wasn't honest, a little voice in my head will start playing a video of where I wasn't honest and I lied. Was I courageous? Did I have any courage? No, I was frightened here. A voice, it'll show me that. I go through my values, my handrails, my principles. And I look at where I've gone off the beam. And then the most important line, Juana, I had to work with her on this, is the very end of this thing. It says, in the very end, you ask God's forgiveness, your best friend's forgiveness, and what corrective measures to take. You ask that. It doesn't say ask and then figure it out. It says ask. So I would have to tell her, you ask God for his forgiveness, his, hers, shims, I don't care what it is, forgiveness, and what corrective measures you should take, and you go to sleep. Because when we awaken in the morning, the first thing we do is ask God to direct our thinking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. When I do that, my thought life goes on a higher plane. Mm-hmm. And usually the thoughts I get are higher. It's like a little trap door opens and God says, okay, this is improving my conscious contact. Well, give me an answer on how those corrective measures can be taken. Mm-hmm. You've got to trust this presence.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Got to trust it. And you're not, you're trusting your brain. You're doing the ism. You're doing, I sponsor myself. I don't do that. I'm scared of what I might think. That's why Missy gets calls at 11 o'clock. Are you up? And she'll say, what do you need? Right, Miss? I mean, there are times we've been best friends forever. I will say to Missy, put your sponsor hat on. I'm looking for direction. I don't want to believe what I'm creating in my mind. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yay.
No. Would you like to close us out, Mary, in your usual way?
Oh, let's close. Let's close with a serenity prayer. I think that's needed a lot when it comes to emotional sobriety. I remember when I finally understood that I didn't have any serenity about being an alcoholic, and I remember asking for it. And in actuality, I didn't have any serenity about being in a pandemic. And I think I've moved to have some. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things, the courage to change, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. God bless.